AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Buckle up, you beauties, because we're about to dive deep into the world of all things hockey.
Pigeon!
A greasy pigeon isn't just any old bird. It's a message. It's letting the other guy know exactly where they stand. And it is not meant to be friendly.
You guys are sensitive over there.
And now, from the Pigeon's Nest, your hosts, Jeff Sullivan and Kevin Trussler. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I am your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, there he is, the beauty of a guy, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, say what up to the people.
What is going on? Another week, Jeff. Another week, another paycheck.
Another week. I know. This paycheck, they're big coming from this show, baby. You make sure you don't spend it all in one place. You know what I mean?
It's already spent.
That's right. What do you got, the six-pack in the cooler? Is that why, Kev?
We kept it modest, maybe a couple.
There you go. Wonderful. Any takeaways, Kev? The NHL season's, believe it or not, when you're eight games in, you're getting close to that 10% mark already. Any surprises, anything that really throws you for a loop so far in the young NHL season?
Well, I think, you know, the start that the Avalanche had, right? They came out of the gate terrible, but they picked it up over the last few weeks. You know, San Jose... Oh boy, are they going to win a game this year? It makes you wonder. The Bruins, I think, are right where I thought they would be. You know, October is a tough month with what was on the schedule. Right now, they're 500, still trying to catch their stride. But you know, more importantly, my brother's teams. You know, the Flames are on fire, and he's got bragging rights right now in the house. The old man with the Leafs. You know, we had a nice. Overtime win on Saturday, so that I noticed the chatter was a little quiet after that game there. And you know, the Sabres are the Sabres. Sorry, Big D, but you know.
Well, and as you mentioned, the Calgary Flames, our guest today, gave us the thumbs up. If you're watching on YouTube, you saw that. We are honored to have our guest with us today. His name is Mark Reimer, and I don't think that's any relation to the current Reimers of the NHL regime, although even though it's a goalie also. But Mark Reimer was a Saskatoon Blades staple back in the mid-80s, and that led him to be the 1987 fourth-round draft pick for the Detroit Red Wings, number 74 overall, which as a goalie in that era is nothing to shake a stick at. Mark, we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us on the podcast today. Welcome to the Pigeon's Nest, my friend.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it. It's good to be here. And go Flames. Yeah, big Flames fan.
Yeah, what do you, before we get into to you and your story, I mean, what are you seeing? I mean, you, right now, full disclosure, you are sitting in the holy city of Calgary, in the kitchen up there north of the border. What is it? What is it like up there this time of year with a good start?
I think everybody's pretty excited, but they do know it's early in the season and anything can happen, right? We rode the wave for like 5 games. We've had down to the last two, but that's a long year. So hopefully they hang in there. We'll see.
Beautiful. Well, again, second full disclosure of the opening segment, Kev. Mark Reimer isn't just a former professional hockey player. He is a hockey dad friend of ours and a former coaching partner of yours down here in Florida. At some point in your life, it took you significantly south of where you are now, down to Florida. But before we get into that, I have one question. I don't know if the stats are correct. I don't know how they were keeping them back in the late 80s. But is it true that you had 31 penalty minutes as a goaltender one of your years at the Blades, or is that a misprint on the stat sheet?
No, that's very possible. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we can go into that. We'll get there a little bit. Yeah, sure.
Well, I don't want to keep the...
They might have been a little different back then, right? You know? Well, it's, Yeah.
Was it the style of play in the W, or what was it up there, Mark?
That team was probably one of the toughest teams probably ever created in the Western League, and I felt pretty tough being a goalie on it, to put it that way.
To finish out your career, and I know we'll go down it, but you know, you ended up in Florida, right? From a roller perspective, you are also listening and seeing a roller hockey legend when that was a pro league.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Roller hockey was awesome. Yeah, we'll get in that for sure. Definitely loved it. Loved every moment. Wish they still had a pro league.
Well, Mark, so your hockey dad, your son Ben, is currently playing Junior A here in the States. He's in the NA3HL with the Atlanta Capitals. Very productive start to the season. Really good. I believe he's an 05 birth year forward. Correct, Mark?
Yeah, he is. Yep. Centerman. Okay.
With his size, you default to a player of that. Of his size and stature being a defenseman, that's where always my head goes, but he is a very skilled power forward. And Kevin, you know better than I do with what he brings to the team on the ice.
Well, first and foremost, how did you not get him in the pipes? How did he not follow the old man's, way of playing and being a goalie?
Good question. We did try that. We did some 3-on-3. We had him at the goalie clinics at TBSA a little bit. Just wasn't for him. I don't think putting on all that gear and carrying all the gear around was for him. It's just a lot of work.
He made the right decision because, yeah, you were right. He has silky hands, a smooth lefty, just a great, great player and unbelievable vision, sees the game well. And, you know, I had the opportunity to coach him a couple times and, an excellent teammate, that's for sure. So Atlanta's definitely lucky to have him for a second year. So you and Patty should be proud, that's for sure.
We are, no doubt about it. He's really developed. He's a late bloomer, that's for sure. He didn't start playing travel hockey till with you as a 14-year-old. So it just goes to show you, I mean, it's never too late, right? I told him, the only way you're going to play travel hockey, you got to be a difference maker. I mean, if you're going to be just go there and sit on the bench, it's not worth it. You're going to have to get yourself to the point where you're going to have to prove some things. You have to prove your skating. And if you can do that and show that you can be like a difference maker, yes, let's do it. But not something I wanted to throw him into just to make him a travel hockey player back then. To tell you the truth, when we were playing rec, I would have been happy just playing rec hockey for not juniors. It's like a father-son thing. It's all I was in it for. It's for him and I to do things together. And that was... For the travel thing to come along, great, but it's something I really looked at doing. It just happened.
Well, and you said, right? I mean, it's never too late. When you were still learning the game and pushing yourself and, getting minutes, we talked about that in previous shows. I mean, you get an opportunity to play probably a lot more because in the travel leagues, they don't carry full, four lines and four sets of D. Yeah, you're pretty much out there every shift or every other shift, unless you're Jeff coaching and you'll bench him. But that's a story for another day.
Got to earn your playing time on my team, buddy. Those Listen 8U kids yeah. didn't know what hit them. But Mark, some parallels, right? You kind of mentioned Ben's kind of start to his career, rec hockey, kind of late bloomer to the travel scene. I did get to coach Ben on a couple of those summer teams the last couple seasons. So I know his character's personality. any parallels to your youth career? What was your youth days like? I know the eras were different and you had a Canadian upbringing. What was your youth hockey career like, and how did that set you up for your transition to eventually what was the WHL?
Yeah, definitely very, very different. I mean, Calgary, even back when I started playing here 40 plus years ago, is very structured. And unlike Florida, hasn't got there yet. Calgary, a pretty big city. It's real simple. There's four quadrants. You got northwest, northeast, southwest, southeast. Wherever you grow up, that's where you play. In Bantam, the first time, Bantam's where we started with travel programs, Bantam AA. Before that, it was regular playing in your community, outdoor rink, playing against other communities when you're 8, 9, 10. Pee Wee, 11, 12 is still just rec hockey, really. And it got a little bigger. The demographics got a little bigger for Pee Wee, but it really got serious, really come Bantam. If you didn't make your Bantam AA team, you went and played B hockey. Didn't make that. You played C hockey in that. And then it grew down. There's probably only one double A team. There might have been one single A. There might have been two B teams. Might have been four C teams. But real simple. You try out for the top team. You don't make it. You work your way down. Everyone's just playing for the love of the game, right?
So question. I know, like, growing up in Ontario, contact hitting started in Pee Wee and then it stopped. I mean, that changed maybe a couple years after I was through Pee Wee. Looking back, I played against some monsters, guys that were man-child, and they definitely ruined some dreams and made people pack up the skates and decide to play another sport because of that. But did you see a lot of that, though? You know, the West is tough, first of all.
I never noticed anybody quitting the game from body contact, to tell you the truth. They did change the rules, I think, a couple times from one age to the other age with hitting. And there's just two different groups. Like, one group thinks should be more skill and should wait on hitting and develop your skill. Another group is they better get ready for hitting now. Why wait? So everyone has a different perspective, right? But I never noticed it being an issue growing up. Yeah.
No. So when you were up there, Calgary, doing your youth, were you always the kid making the top team once it came down to that? Or did you find yourself, you know, kind of falling down that ladder and then working your way back up? What was your specific kind of pathway?
Actually, I had a pretty smooth ride going through minor hockey. Just the beginning, I'm thinking about this talk today, and I was thinking about the very first time my mom asked me to play hockey. It was just down the hallway in this house. I think it was a weekday night. Probably made the biggest decision of my life. She was like a Wednesday night, said, "Hey," they just said, "Hey, Mark, there's hockey registrations this weekend. Do you want to play hockey?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm not too sure. Can I get back to you tomorrow or next day?" I mean, I was kind of loving my life as it is. I mean, being an 8-year-old kid, I mean, I have friends, I'm doing other things, playing in the yard, playing ball, whatever. It just never dawned on me that I was going to play real hockey. So, and no one really pressured me. My dad's a big hockey fan, but he never said, push me into playing hockey. It was just the next day she asked me again, "Have you made up your mind?" I said, "Yeah, I'll give it a try. Let's do it." And, I went from there. So probably the biggest decision of my life was right there and the path it took me, right? If I would have said no, who knows what would have happened, right? But anyways, from there on, I started tryouts where everyone played all positions growing up at 8, 9, playing outside in outdoor rinks. Remember, coming off the ice and my feet were frozen solid. Worst pain in the world when you take your skates off and they're frozen, they thaw out. I will always remember that pain. There's nothing worse. But anyways, for me, I just love the game. And then I just, when they, the next year, they made us change positions all the time. And goalie seemed like a fun thing. And then I seemed to enjoy it. I guess I did all right with it. And the next year after that, goalie, I was asked to play goalie the whole season. I said, "Okay, sure, I'll do it." And it's just something I really love. You got to really have a passion for it, right? It's just, it's not something you can, goaltending, I guess, with anything, but you really got to love it. You got to love what you do, right? And as a kid growing up, I never really dawned on me anything bad that could happen. It's just always, hey, I'm going out there and playing the game. That's all I'm doing. And so going into Bantam, tried out for the Bantam team. Yep, just loving the game. Had a first year was Bantam Minor. We had a decent team. Next year, Bantam Major. We had a really good team. We won provincials. A couple other guys on that team were actually, it just kind of shows you the level of play even then. I had two other guys on my team, my NHL draft picks. I didn't play, but like Glenn Mulvenham, I had played a handful of games in Pittsburgh. Steve McNamath was drafted by the Rangers, and I played in Europe. But anyways, that's just Bantam. So we won one of the provincials. Great thing. The next year was midget. My first year of midget is Calgary Royals organization, which is still around today. Actually, as a 15-year-old, I remember going to Calgary Canucks camp and playing a game for them in the AJHL. My parents didn't think it was a good idea playing as a 15-year-old, so I went to midget, right? Played midget hockey. Played on a struggling team of the Royals. It was some of our younger players were our best players, which was well for the next year. But I remember I was looking back to you just talking about it today and thinking about back then is I remember being so competitive, like after games, I'd be crying if we lost. I'd feel responsible for it. You know what I mean? So it's like, goalie, I think maybe I went overboard a little bit too much that way. I think back at it going, God, do you really care that much? You're crying. But I was actually crying. We had a bad team. I got a lot of shots, but I felt like it was my fault. You know what I mean? And anyways, great, good learning experience that year. Got a lot of shots. Went on to the next year. We had some veteran players came in. Our younger guys were all good. Namath and Mulvaney were there again. We had more. Rob DeMaio was on that team. Might have heard his name before. But anyways, for the Royals, the second year, we were picked to go to Germany to represent Canada in a midget world championship thing. So we did that. That was a great experience. We played. It's the first time I got an experience playing against Russian teams. And wow, a learning experience just watching pass the puck around. Not shooting. Waiting for the great opportunity. It's like, wow, this is amazing. And I just remember the dressing room and guys like, we got to beat these Russians and they're pissed. We got to beat them. Of course, we got killed like 8-1, something like that. I mean, but everyone's bitter. Just love the atmosphere in the dressing room, right? Like Canada against Russia. And
North-South, right? Hockey against, you know, truly dynamic five-man unit. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it's working it around. Yep.
Just like this is a new brand of hockey I've never seen before. Wow. It was a great experience. But anyways, so we had a really good midget team that year. There were six teams in the southern part of Alberta. I think there's six in the north. We won the south. And we played against the one team that could probably beat us, and they did, was Ken Hitchcock. I don't know if you heard of Ken Hitchcock, the coach from Sherwood Park. He had his teams were always the top team around, but we were a really good team that year. They were a really good team that year. The winner of that team would probably go on to win it all, I think, in Canada. I don't know if they did or not, but they beat us. And one thing I remember about that team I'll never forget is we did beat them. That Royals team, we played five tournaments, won every tournament, but we couldn't beat them. But I remember one thing about that Sherwood Park team is when they would come out to warm up in sync, they would butt on the boards. In sync, all the way around the boards, like boom, 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 boom. And so you're looking like, wow, holy cow, I've never seen anything like it. And it's just like, you're either going, wow, or you're just like, what the heck? They're like really, they look really confident and like they're coming up to play hockey. They're ready. But that was a Ken Hitchcock thing. I don't know if you guys know the coach. He went on to play coach in Kamloops year after that. He was a top junior hockey coach. He went to the NHL. Pretty sure he won a Stanley Cup with Dallas, longtime coach. He's from Edmonton, but he knew what he was doing. He's just a guy who never played hockey and just grew up playing, started playing midget, and worked his way up from there. Amazing story.
That is one thing I heard about him, too, that he hadn't played, which is, you know, typically not the norm when you're a coach. So it's usually play a little bit, right? Whether it be even beer league or what have you.
But as far as the next step, the next year after that, I belonged to the Calgary Wranglers, which was the Western Hockey League team back there. There wasn't a draft then. You were put on a 50-man protected list. So I'd been on there since I was 15. And I think they expected me to make that team that year. But an unfortunate accident happened being a kid in September, training camp, doing stupid things. On my buddy's dad's paintmobile, they called it, the station wagon. We used to ride it, ride the roof on it. Just dumb, stupid kid stuff, right? But anyways, we're trying to. I thought it was a chick magnet, you know, back then. We're wheeling some girls on the side of the road and in the wagon and the paintmobile, and he's driving. And he's the type of guy who would check their pressure and the tires before we drove anywhere, that kind of thing. Great guy. And he'll probably see this. He'll probably give me a hard time. But anyways. We stopped at, you know, I said, hey, Bear, pull over. I want to talk to this girl. Anyways, he stopped, and I thought he had stopped for good. I started getting out of the car, and the car kept moving. It rolled over my ankle, threw me out of the car. So I twisted up my ankle, my knee. My buddies took me to the hospital. I came home, sitting on this couch right here. And my parents, My parents walked in the house, had no idea, and they seen me in crutches. And, oh, my God. That was a tough one to explain right there. But anyways, so that wasn't good. That wasn't a good start to my junior career. 2 months later after that, I started playing with the Calgary Canucks. They were the affiliate of the Wranglers, so I had to get myself back in shape. And actually, my goaltending partner that year was, I was a 16-year-old. My goaltending partner was a 15-year-old. His name was Mark Fitzpatrick. He played many games in NHL as well. I played in Florida, the Islanders, L.A.
Yep. Very familiar with the name. No kidding.
But anyways, Calgary Canucks, good experience. Played, it came January and the trade happened. The Wranglers, I guess, thought it was a bad act. I don't know. They traded me to Saskatoon. I can remember walking in the house after a Canucks game one day, and here I walk in the house and the head coach of the Saskatoon Blades, Marcel Como, was sitting talking to my parents. No one told me about it. I walked in the house. Hey, Mark. And it was like kind of an uncomfortable feeling. I found out later the reason he was there is he'd asked my parents if I could go play there now, like in January. My mom said, no, not until school's over. So I had no idea. She didn't tell me that then. I guess she knew I'd be upset. But I found out years later. So the end of the year, she said, I'd go when school's done. So the Canucks season ended. And they called me up for the last two games of the regular season, which are in Brandon, and won both games. Then they sent me back to Calgary because I'd read a test because my mom didn't have it any other way. I had to go back to Calgary. And then they asked me to play the playoffs. Holy cow, I played two regular season games and they're going to throw them in the playoffs against a team that was far superior than us. Saskatoon was an older team. One player you might recognize was on that team was Wendell Clark.
Yeah.
Played for heart and soul of Toronto right there. Yeah.
I don't know if you realize he was a defenseman back then, thank God. In the wing.
No
he played
kidding.
Junior as a defenseman. He didn't play on the wing until he left Saskatoon.
See, there you go, kids. Listen, right? I mean, because shot was by far that unbelievable.
If you were to ask me who had the probably shots I faced, who had the hardest shots, he would be one of two guys. He, in practice, well, of course, I only played with him for 2 weeks, right? 3 weeks. But anyway, that was the year he got drafted. But anyways, his wrist shots, like, boom, you took it's in a net before you even react, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Amazing, amazing shot. And you saw that in NHL, obviously.
Yeah, but, he was one that snapshot was, to me, he was the guy. If you had a snapshot, wrist shot, because he didn't, obviously he had a good clapper too, but he didn't have to scratch the rooftops, right?
Just a heart and soul guy, right? He's going to do whatever, he's going to put his body on the line every night. And you just got to love guys like that, right? That just motivates your whole team. I wish he would have got a cup. We lost 5-4 in overtime in Regina. And holy cow, it was the talk of the town. This kid, Brian Marquez, doesn't even have a name on the back of his jersey. And where'd he come from? That kind of thing, right? So
it was what number? What number were you?
I don't even remember. I have no clue. But you know what's so wild about back in those days is you're so naive. You don't think about the bad things. Like you just going out there and having fun, being excited to be there. I mean, my one thing growing up, I attended so many, my dad took me to a lot of Calgary Wrangler games, watched Mike Vernon, right? Well, I want to be like Mike Vernon. That's what I want to do. I want to play in the Western Hockey League. That was my goal. I want to be the guy in the Western Hockey League, right? So just watching those teams come to town and seeing that brand of hockey, I loved it. I loved being there. Just best. Anyway, so that was game one, but game two didn't go so well. We ended up losing that game 17-3.
Holy moly.
So I lasted for about 8 goals. Unfortunately, the other goaltender partner had to finish it off, but it was like crazy. I mean, I've never been on the end of that in any game in any league. 17-3. So that's that's an eye-opening experience. Actually, the other goalie was Holpe. His son actually played a number of years in the NHL. Greg Holpe.
But hey, you only gave up a touchdown in the two-pointer mark, so you're, you know.
But you know what? That's great back then. Being a naive kid, it's like, okay, it's over. It's done. Whatever. I didn't even. That's how next. So anyways, I couldn't believe they asked me to play the next game too. Game three, it's a best of five. So I did play the next game back in Saskatoon. It was a good game. I played decent. We lost, I think, 5-4, and the series was over, 3 straight. But what a great experience both ways, right? Getting my
what
foot in the door.
Did they have a goalie that went down?
No, I don't think they were confident in their goalies all year. That's why I think they wanted him to be there earlier.
Yep.
And
yep.
So when they had the opportunity, I guess, thankfully they took a chance on me. I'll never forget, like, Marcel Como. I mean, it's one thing for coaches to remember. I mean, if you show confidence in your players, your goalie especially, I mean, it goes a long ways. I mean, I was his man, and he showed a lot of confidence in me. And I can't let him down, right? Because if you're a player, you're not going to let him down. I remember him picking me up at the airport. I stayed at his house. He had me at his house. It was just a great experience. And I really looked forward. I kind of felt leaving there that, hey, I'm going to be back here next year, and I'm going to have a position, which I did. I came back the next year, and we had a decent team. We had a young team. We struggled a little bit, made the playoffs, did okay. My goaltending partner that year was Tim Chevalier. You probably have heard him, played in the Detroit Red Wings for a while,
yep.
Right? So we actually, we split every game. He played a game, I played a game. That happened all year long. The next year, pretty much the same thing. I might have played a few more games than him the next year. But it was really a cool situation. I think it would be good if NHL teams did that more often, because, you know, for a goalie mentally, I got to focus on the next game, right?
Yeah,
I know that's his game, and I hope we win and do well, but I could be ready for the next game. You know what I mean? So you get that mental break every game. I just think playing 60, 70 games is crazy. And all the power to him. Maybe I couldn't have done it. Maybe these guys are amazing, but good for them. But I just think that's amazing to do that.
And I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because Jeff and I, obviously Bruin fans, in the last two seasons, what we saw with... That's
shots
awesome.
Fired, yeah. Shots fired.
But, you know, with Swayman and Allmark, right? Like, they genuinely look like they cared for one another, right, and didn't mind who got the cage type of deal. And to me, I think that's not the norm. I know, you know, a lot of guys, they want to play as much as they can. And sometimes, you know, that can break up a tandem as well, right? Where, you know, hey, you want your partner to do well while they're in there, but do you want them to do too well that eventually you could lose your spot?
That's a great example.
With Tim, like, did you have that feeling that it was, no, let's just do this for the
well,
betterment
working,
of the team?
Right? It was working. Yeah. So if it worked, I always wanted the team to win it, whether I'm playing or not. Yeah, I'm playing it or he's playing. But again, honest with you, if he did let him a few games that bad game, that's kind of like, okay, it takes the pressure off me a little bit. Honestly, you know, I'm thinking honest. I mean, okay, yeah, I mean, but you want the team to win every game, right? It doesn't matter who's playing, you want to win. But anyways, that team was decent. The next year, we came together. We had a really good team. And like we were talking about earlier, we had a tough team. I mean, there's a lot of intimidation factor back then in junior hockey. And we played in the old barn. Actually, the new rink opened the year I left. But it was a 3,200-seat building with the fans arrayed on top. You'd be kind of like the old Boston Garden. It was a treat to play in, and other opposing teams hated playing there, you could tell. And they knew coming in here was not going to be any fun. It's going to be – we had guys like Kelly Chase, Tony Twist. I mean, they played in St. Louis for a number of years, tough characters.
And heavyweights in – the NHL.
Yeah, in the NHL. Yeah. I mean, another guy, Kevin Kaminsky, he's probably 170 pounds soaking wet. This guy, I remember his bloody face all the time. He didn't care how big the guy, he would fight anybody. It doesn't matter. If he got beat up, he would show up again. He just, guys like that, I just don't see that anymore.
Relentless.
Amazing. What's that?
How many had this Saskatoon flu coming into the barn?
Exactly.
Right?
Saw that a little
bit. I mean, one of those, I'm not feeling it today, coach. Yeah. I'll pick up the bus in the next city.
we did have a pretty impressive home record, and that had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
We had a lot of depth in our scoring, though, too. Every line could score. I mean, guys that played in the NHL, guys like Sean Van Allen, he played the Ottawa Anaheim for a bit. Todd McClellan ended up being a really still good coach. I'm sure he might get picked up this year again. So who else? We have Kerry Clark's another tough customer. Curtis Lecision, young defenseman at the time, played in Colorado. I know I'm missing names, but fun group to be a part. Just a treat to be living in Saskatoon where it's hockey crazy. Saskatchewan, these farm kids are not the same. They're like, it's a breed apart. These guys are tough. I mean, coming from Calgary, biggest city kid. I mean, these guys are tough kids, tough customers.
But my younger brother said that he played for the Weyburn Red Wings, right?
Yeah.
Which would be tier two, junior A, and yeah, he said it's they're definitely made differently out there.
I love my time in Saskatoon. Great time. Fans are just awesome. But we played in the Eastern Division Championship. Probably the biggest, when I look back, the biggest regret for a loss, the toughest loss ever, was Game 7. We played Medicine Hat. If we won, we knew we had our bags packed. We're going to Portland, playing Portland Winterhawks in the championship. And we knew Medicine Hat and Saskatoon were the two top teams. So we knew if we won this game, we had a pretty good chance, and we lost. And you look back, you know who I played against. The goalie for Medicine Hat was Mark Fitzpatrick, my goalie partner in Calgary. So for the Canucks, it's funny how it's just a cycle of players that you run into all along. But so we lost. He probably outplayed me. And that's tough, bitter pun. I'll never forget. I just that's one game I really wish I would have won. We lost, and it is what it is. But
blame it on the D, Mark. Blame it on the D.
they didn't score enough, Kev. They didn't score enough. If they scored more goals, they would have won the game. That's how that works.
It goes. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Yeah. They got to go through five guys first, Mark.
You know? That's right. So, Mark, with all that talent in one place, and you put a bunch of names in that saw meaningful games in the show. How did you get scouted back then? Was it because there was so many just talent, so much talent in the building that you were kind of not that you didn't have it in your own right, but were you discovered because they were there looking at all these forwards and defensemen and, oh, hey, this goalie's pretty good too? Or were you your own standalone name and they were coming out there to watch you to scout you for the NHL? Like, what was that process like back then?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't think they were coming to watch me at first. Actually, my draft year was 2 years earlier. It was a year that I went up at the end of the year playing Saskatoon. That was actually my draft year. The next year, my first year in Saskatoon, I had a pretty good year and a decent year. And I thought, I was told there's a good chance I get drafted. I didn't. I ended up going to the Winnipeg Jets camp that year, the next training camp. I didn't get drafted, but they invited me to training camp. And I had, it's probably the time where I realized that, you know what, I'm comparing myself to the goalies that are there. I go, you know what, I can do this. And I can tell you the goalies back in training camp in Winnipeg, and maybe you recognize them, like Smokey, Pokey Redick, Daniel Berthoum, Steve Penny, Dan Bouchard. I mean, those are the goalies. And looking at them back then, I'm going, Steve Penny, he played for Montreal. It just doesn't look that great. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, I just
– Was Bob Asenza? Asenza
came right after that. The goalies year, I think Winnipeg ended up playing there, were Redick and Berthoum. The Bandit. They called Daniel the Bandit Berthoum, I think they call him. But anyways, Dan Bouchard, he was pretty much the very end of his career. I think he packed it in. But I remember him, though, in training camp and giving me the best advice and liking when I did. And so he let me know that. And he said, just if you can remember one thing. And we didn't talk about it back then that much, but right now I think it's probably the number one thing. When I watch goalies play and I watch NHL goalies, watch any level goalie, are they tracking the puck? Are they watching it all the time? Are they watching it all the way into their body? And I remember Dan Bouchard telling me that, and it stuck with me. You know what? It's like, if you're not finding the puck, it's probably a good chance. You got to find the puck. You can't do anything until you find the puck. You got to follow it with your eyes. You got to follow it into your glove. You got to follow it into your body. You got to see it hit you. You gotta track the puck. And I remember if you see it, you're gonna stop it. That's the mentality you gotta have. I mean, if I see the puck, I'm gonna stop it. But if you can't find it, you gotta be laser focused on that puck. I mean, if there's one thing that I picked up from him, it was that. And you watch NHL goalies and you can see goals go in where they just lost it. They just didn't see the puck, right? I mean, they can't find it. But actually, another thing about the Winnipeg camp that I remember is and thank you guys for letting me bring this all back, because I wouldn't have I don't think about this every day. But anyway, actually going to another good story before I say that is in Calgary, the Calgary Canucks, my year I played there, I'll never forget it. I still live this to this day. We were feeling pretty confident after a win. And then the next day, I remember he saying, I don't know if he said it to me, like Reimer, he said to the team, they said, no one reads old newspapers. Of course, we don't have newspapers anymore. But he said, no one cares what you did yesterday. Just focus on today. And what's really good advice, right? So I'm really good advice. Like who really, and it's probably why I don't talk about what I did before a whole lot, but I'm trying to focus on today and trying to live in the present, right? For me, where I live, I just want to live in today. I want to do the right things today. If you take care of today, tomorrow should be all right, right? But but it was great. I'll never forget him saying that and going, you know what? That's right. I mean, no one's thinking about what I, after this game tonight, no one cares what I did yesterday. So it's all about what you bring today. It doesn't matter what you did yesterday. Nobody cares, really. So good advice for me, good advice for everybody.
Now, is that like as a fine line as a goaltender, right? Like, you know, the ones that got away, or, you know, you have to have amnesia, but you also have to remember too, I would imagine, like, hey, what did I do right there? And what could I have done better, right? As far as tracking the puck, or when I see kids today in goal, like we all know there's good goalies. And then it gets to a point now where you have to freeze it when you can freeze it, deflect it, kick the rebound so it's not going to be coming on out in the slot, right? Like, it's fine-tuning it. One thing is to stop the puck, tracking it, making sure you're understanding where's the puck going to end up. Like, it's a big part of it.
Yeah.
I see kids that definitely have the ability to. I just don't know if they're taught that, you know, as much as maybe they should be. And you guys would know that a lot more, just being, you know, Jeff being a goalie dad and Mark, you playing.
It's funny, back then, there wasn't a whole lot of goalie coaching. I mean, goaltending position was different. I mean, in practice, we'd do drills, like I had the goalie coach would have me stacking my pads, right? I'd be sort of the kind of other side of the crease, pass puck over, and I'd be stacking my pads, right? Which you don't even see anymore, right? Unless you're watching beer league hockey. It's a totally different game. I mean, really, I mean, the bottom line for a goalie then and goalie now is how competitive are you? You better be, you gotta have that drive where you're competitive. You want to win, obviously, right? Because you can't be successful if you're not. And you gotta have, like you said, forget things. You have to have a good, you have to let things go. A goal gets scored, you move on, right? You move on.
Yeah.
I always said to myself, and I still believe this as a coach or as a goalie, that next goal, whether you just scored or your team just scored, you just got scored against, that next shift is huge. Let's be ready for that next shift, because I'm not going to get too excited if we just scored. I got to be focused on that next shift, right? Same thing I get scored on, it's done. I got to be ready for that next shift, right?
Well, and Mark, when like Sully was just talking to me after he played a game last week and they got the W, and for his admission, he didn't think he played as well as he could have, right? And I would agree, watching his game, it wasn't his, you know, A-plus performance. But they got the W and found a way to win the game, right? So that's the first box you want to check all day long. But after talking to him after the game, he was, you know, he already knew some of the mistakes he made during the game, you know, why goal two went in and that sort of thing. He knew that in the play, like as the goal was going in, he was saying he already knew why it went in. Like he knew what he did wrong. In your experience, Mark, how often does that happen? Is that only certain goaltenders at certain levels? Is that all goaltenders? Is that, to your point, the goaltenders that love the game, that can break it down that fast and try to literally make those adjustments mid-game? Or was that something you had experience with, or was that not the way your mind worked?
My mind, no way I could think about things that just happened. It's you can't, as a goalie, you can't think too much, right? You just go out there and play. But after games, yeah, I would go over every goal in my mind and what could have I done differently. In my mind, I could have stopped every one, right? There's something I could have done a little different. Doesn't matter what it was, that I would have stopped that puck. I think that's the mentality you got to have, but you can't think too much when you're playing. You just, it's the goal's done. You got to move on. Let's make the next save, right? But after the game, yeah, I would go over every goal in my mind and go how I could have treated it differently, how I could have saved it. There's got to be something I could have done differently. But when the game's on, that's laser focus time, right? That's when the on switch goes on. You're just stopping the puck. I mean, simplify it. It's not a hard job. Just stop the puck. I mean, really, just find a way to stop the puck, but don't think too much.
I can definitely imagine if you see, you know, Jeff and I hopping the boards as the D partners that you know you're going to stop a lot of pucks.
Oh yeah, baby. Full rubber barrage.
Got a lot of shots, but maybe not.
Yeah, there's going to be tire changes. They're going to run out of, you know, pucks with all the pucks that are come at you. But I know one of the things when we coached together, I mean, one of the cool things that you did for Nate and EJ was just about writing down what you did right, what you did wrong. You want to talk a little bit about that real quick with, you know, for some of the youth coaching out there?
Yeah, I know I did it. I did it at a young age. I did it, I don't know if anybody told me to do it, but playing in junior, I had a notebook, and after every game, I would write down the score, the shots, the goals against, and I'd go in 10-game segments, and my goal is to have more wins and losses and make every 10-game segment a little better. So I would make mental notes in that booklet of what maybe I could have done better. I think it's a really good tool. Have a notebook and write down how that game went. You can look at, when you're 40 games in, you can look at game 10 and go, okay, what was the mistakes then? Am I doing that now? Have I improved on that? I think that's a great tool. No doubt about it. I really believe in that. I think everybody, if they want to do themselves a favor, get a notebook, start writing down every game and how it went. And let's make sure that curve is going up, right? Make it so we're getting better as the season goes on. We don't want to see too much of this going on, right? So it's going to happen. We know that. But I think it's a great thing. Great thing.
Well, and goalie coaching is still an issue. I've said it before on the show. I say USA Hockey, but I feel like all youth hockey has a goaltending development problem. They don't quite know how to identify the players that maybe want to play, or they pigeonhole them way too early. I mean, seeing U7s and U8s in matching brand new equipment, you know, with the wrapped helmet and everything else, because, you know, at that point, dad wants them to be a goalie, right? There's almost no other explanation for it. The kid doesn't know they want to be a goalie yet full time, but you're basically telling that kid he has to be, right? Like, that's not how Sully got into it. He was like you, Mark, play every position. Hey, you show more promise than the other kids. Can you play this game? Can you play this game? Hey, we want you for next season. And then you kind of become a goalie. And even then, he's still platooned as a defenseman with another kid. They didn't dress two goalies for the game. They dressed the one goalie and the other goalie played D, and they did that for a while until it, you know, you got to basically 10U and it sorted itself out, right? So that to me is how it should go. And Bauer makes quick on, quick off equipment now, so you can literally swap players mid-game to give more kids an opportunity. Like, that's the way it needs to go, right? Goalies cannot be the shooter tutor, the just stand there in the net and face 1,500 shots at practice from dot slap shots all practice long because you're my goalie. What I'm getting at, Mark, is you said your goalie coaching was somewhat non-existent even when you were coming up. Did you learn through the shooter tutor garbage can in the net, just stand there and face the rubber and figure it out on your own? Or did you have a little bit of structure that set you up for success?
No, there's always a little bit of structure. I think, I don't know, maybe now there's too much. I mean, you have so many different viewpoints of goaltending, and some you don't know whether to believe them or that everyone's got a different angle. So for me thinking, like, you see goal, I just still can't understand. Maybe you can explain it to me as a goalie, Deb. I still don't understand how goals are being scored on bad angles. And why are they going down? I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense to me. I can honestly, I'm pretty sure I'm standing straight up in the post and there's an angle. They're not going to score me. Plus, I can move a lot better on my feet than I can if I'm down on my knees. I don't get it. Things like that. Maybe I shouldn't be a goalie coach because I could not teach that. So things like that, it doesn't make sense to me. But, but there's probably more qualified people than me to teach this the day and age now, because I don't get that part.
For me to, like, the problem is you've got 8U, 10U, 14U that are looking at these 6-7 monsters in the NHL that are, you know, able to beat down and cover still the net, thinking that I got to do what Vazzy's doing or Saros, or, you know what I mean? And, well, you're leaving so much more open up top.
Well, and again, you, because there's not, you know, yes, there's goalie coaches, and if you're fortunate to find a good one or the right one, you're going to get a lot of guidance on what to do. And, You know, I talk about Sully's goalie coach, Glenn Murphy, with Rain goaltending down here in Florida. He has taken Sully to amazing levels, and he stays on the cutting edge. So to your point, Mark, everything went to that butterfly style, right? Always down, always on your knees. You know, that's why they went to the 6-7 goaltenders, because they took up a lot of the net. Well, now they're learning things called overlap and panda, and everything has a name. And Sully's talking to me about, oh, this goal went in on me because I didn't identify they were in the X position and I needed to be in the one slot. Like, it's all this technical game. So to your point, Mark, just go out there and play.
Yeah.
That's not how Sully's being taught the position nowadays.
Oh my God, I couldn't do it. My mind would be going like around circles. I would say, whoa, I just want to stop the puck and get a win here. That's it. I don't know if I could play in this day and age.
But there's something to that, because you had high success doing it the way you did it, right? See the puck, stop the puck. But I would say that you look at a lot of these goaltenders that truly are, you know, that have the performances we remember, right? And I know I'm biased, but Tim Thomas in 2011, there was nothing technical about that guy. He was see the puck, stop the puck, jump all over, dive all over. Dominic Hasek, regarded as one of the best. Patrick Roy. These guys didn't have panda, overlap, upside down, RVH, see the puck, stop the puck, and then punch some guys in the face once in a while. That's pretty much how they played the game.
I think every goalie is different, and they all have different strengths and weaknesses. So you got to play those strengths and weaknesses, right? So it's kind of like a coach having a new team. Depending on your players and what kind of style they have, you kind of have to decide how you're going to play. And a goalie, I mean, as a goalie coach, I think you have to figure out what you have there and do the right things for him, right? I mean, that's some decisions to be made. What can he do? What can he do? I mean, what's his mental structure? I mean, there's a lot to it.
Playing the puck, Mark. I know, you know, Jeff and I have talked about this.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
I have to, right? Because, you know, my older brother was a goalie and a very good one, and he was like a sixth player out there. How much of playing the puck in your style and game versus some of your former teammates, like, was that a big thing? I know, look, Brodeur was probably – Ekstall would be the one I think of that probably started that the most that I can remember. How much of playing the puck did you believe in? And
you're right. Ekstall is probably the first guy. I can tell you the first guy that I saw shoot that could fire the puck, and his name was Smokey McLeod. He's a goalie for the Calgary Cowboys. And back in 75, that guy could fire the puck. I could never see him before. And he's got to be one of the first ever to do it, because I was, well, in awe. And I did have a coach who he got some experience in Germany, or actually Russia, came back, and he said, you need to be able to fire the puck over the blue line, from blue line to blue line. And that was at a young age. So, I think it's just being able to stop the puck and put it in the right position for the D to get it on their forehand, but whatever, make it easy for the D. It's just make it simple, right? Make the easy play. I mean, make the easy play. You don't have to, if you can't rifle it out of the zone, that's fine. But just make the easy play, the smart play. That's really what it comes down to.
What do you think your thing was? And a thing is in air quotes. What was your factor, the Reimer wow factor that got the attention, even if it could have been at 16 years old that got the attention of the coach from Saskatoon? It could have been when you were at Saskatoon that got the eye of the Red Wings. What was the Reimer thing that set you apart from every other goalie? And tie that into what you would tell today's goalie that's, you know, one of very good, top X percent, what can they do extra that makes them stand out that maybe you did or that you wish you did now, knowing what you know now?
Boy, that's a tough question. That's a long time ago. You know what? I think I was, you know, I had success, so I had confidence. You know, I mean, I'm lucky to be on some good teams growing up. So I always had that confidence that wherever they put me in, I've done it before, kind of thing. Growing up, I was on good teams. I was lucky I was on good teams. So I had that confidence. And I was a good skater. I mean, for back then, skating was still preached as being very important for goalies. You did all the skating drills at all the ages. So movement in the crease is a strength. I don't think it's one thing. It's being good at a lot of things. I mean, I know I was smart as far as angles and reading the play. I mean, so I think you got to be above level in all of those categories, whatever they are, kind of thing, to get to the next level. I don't think you can be good at two things and not good at another two skills. I mean, you got to be consistent at all the skills, and you got to be And you got to be consistent every game. I mean, you can't be a guy who, oh, that guy just, man, he had two shutouts in a row. And then 3 games later, he loses 2 games. That's in, but you got to be as consistent as possible at a high level, because that's what they're going to watch for. Every scout will see a guy have a great game. There's goalies out there at every level that are going to have outstanding games. You go, how did he do that? But it's the guys who are consistently do it. I mean, at that level, the junior level, and same thing at the NHL level. How many guys have come up and you've seen like flashes of brilliance, and then all of a sudden they're just gone from them? You don't even hear about them anymore. It's because they're not consistent. You've got to be able to do it game in and game out, no doubt about it.
Mental fortitude, right? I mean, it's a big part of the game. If you don't believe in yourself and your skills, then no one else will. So, Mark, you know, Jeff and I have talked about it. We've talked about it with a lot of the guests that we have on that, you know, have played at the higher level. You know, one of the things is being an athlete. Like, we feel that there's so many kids that just decide to become these one sport, one trick ponies. And, you know, one, it leads to burnout where they end up either fizzling out and not playing it by the time they're 14. But two, you know, the motor skills. What other sports did you play growing up? Was there anything specific that you can tell the audience that that really helped you?
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. And I think it's really hard to do it these days, because these kids are, there's hockey all year round, there's camps, and they have to specialize to get that next level. They're almost pressured to do it all year round, right? It's tough. I get it. My son does it. He's done it. He's just been playing hockey. That's it. And I've tried to get him to play other, I mean, he's played other sports from growing up and he's younger, but from 14 on, he's just played hockey. But me growing up, they usually take the ice out in the winter. I played box lacrosse. So I loved it. I mean, I played out for a little bit, but then I got, of course, I was like a magnet. I just got stuck back in the net. But I loved it. I mean, I remember we won provincial championships in box lacrosse. It was great. It's a tough game. I mean, those balls are hard. It was steel-toed shoes, but it's something you just like to do. I loved it. It was just a nice change. It's a different mentality. I mean, it's a mental break, too, to play hockey all year round. That's just, for me... I mean, when hockey season was done at any level I was at, in one sense, I was glad it was over. I needed a break. Me, I don't think if you're not like fatigued by the end of the season, did you give it your all? I mean, I know I was mentally done. And then I gave it everything I had every game. There's nothing left. I needed a break. And doing a different sport or whatever it is, hobby, it's a mental break. I need more than anything, I think. But
So, Mark, now that you're back at the family home, Is there the old equipment kicking around in the basement, the old cordwood wood stick? Like, what was Reimer's gear of choice back then? Like, was the Bucky the Hasek, like, Jaffa with the cage? Or what were we looking like back in the day?
Yeah, that was brown pads, brown gear, leather pads. Yeah, the worst part about those is they soak up the water, right? The horsehair. Oh my God.
I was going to say, they're still drying out.
It's way harder to play them earlier in the game because everything's so freaking heavy. Oh my, it's crazy how bad. I remember in between periods, they could dry it out and it wouldn't dry out. Even the next day, it fans all over your pads and still wasn't dry. You're going, oh shit. It's like, your kids are so lucky. They should not complain about one thing, kids, these days. I mean, oh my God, everything is so light. It's crazy. No, we played the bucket helmet with a cage on the helmet. I remember the toughest. I remember in midget taking a shot and I got a puck right here, pushed my mask right back to my face. It stitches across here. I mean, nothing like the old bucket and cage, right?
Well, I was going to say, playing in Saskatoon in January, you're probably trying to have the pads unfrozen by the time the third period comes after being on the bus.
Good point. Yeah, you drive to Moose Jaw and 3 hours later in the middle of January, everything's frozen solid. And you know what? It brings me back a really bad memory, because of Moose Jaw back in the old rink. Those pucks must have been frozen. The rink was frozen. Everything hurt. It's like, oh my God, it's just brutal. I don't know how we did it, actually.
The old hot water in the locker room and the showers just to try to get the heat, warm up the locker room?
Yeah,
that a thing?
Are you kidding me?
visitors, they probably shut that off, right?
Exactly.
That's one of those, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Phenomenal. Have you had a chance to don any new goalie equipment? Have you played in the pipes with any of the modern equipment that weighs nothing?
I'm sure last time I played goal was probably 4 years ago, but even those pads, which are probably ancient, were way better than we had back in the day. You kidding me? Way better.
And Mark could bring it. Trust me. We would play against him, and let me tell you, he still had it.
Although you scored on me. You don't have to say that. You scored on me before. I know that.
The young kids were always confused about the two-pad jammer, though, Mark. They had no idea what that was, but, you know, that's what...
Yo, talk about goaltending while we're on the back target. Pocheck. The Pocheck, is it non-existent now? I use that all the time, and I watch goalies, they could have used it and saved a goal, and they don't do it. It's like they don't practice it, but
yeah,
it is there for the taking all the time. I don't see it. I had a coach, Garth Malarchuk, and Midget was my coach. His brother was Clint Malarchuk, and he taught me the Johnny Bauer poke check, and it was always fun. And different ways to poke check. That was one of my skills, actually. I felt pretty comfortable with this poke checking.
Well, it should be a tool that's in the tool belt, right? Because
correct.
As a goalie coach, you would think you'd have every tool possible in that toolbox. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, you figure with all the teaching they do and everything. Again, to like we said it before, Mark, it's so much recognizing the play you're in as a goalie, right? You're down in RVH and they're behind the net. The goalie stick needs to be out to the side to block that pass that comes from behind the end line out front, right? And then if you're on the other side, it's a different angle, but not the wrong angle, because then you'll score on yourself. And like, it's all these different things to know on when to use it. And I will say, I've seen Sully, Kevin, I know you have, we've watched Sully use the poke check on breakaways. You know, obviously that's usually when you use it the most. When that kid wants to make that one extra move, go ahead and poke check. Now, if you sell out on that poke check and he gets by you, well,
it's going to happen too, right?
You're tucking it in, right? Like that's the trade-off there.
And you're going to make mistakes. That is going to happen. But you just got to realize, okay, beat me then. Whatever. Move on.
And I just think there's a lot of like forwards that, ND, if you have a breakaway, you're not expecting that nowadays at all. Like that's probably the last thing in your mind. But I will also say like what these kids can do with the puck, they can make you look silly real quick.
Sure.
It is pretty amazing. What your son can do with a puck, I'm like, it just doesn't make sense to me,
Wraparounds too. You see goalies now being on wraparounds. They go down before the guy, and the guy just goes around them, puts it in the net. I didn't see that happening back in the day.
Yeah.
They just commit way too early. They got to go down. They're like blockers. They're just blocking space. You know what I mean? They're blocking space. And
it's not all like averages. They're
blocking the puck hit him or making the save. It's just blocking space. It's different.
I mean, Mark, you ever heard the term projection angle? Because we talk about it in my house all the time. It's projection angle of the glove, and it's projection angle of where the puck can go. And it can only go to these certain areas when it's in this position because, physics. And now you watch, Trevor Zegras roof it from a foot in front of the line. You're like, well, there goes your physics because he just put the puck there, right? So it's ever-changing. And to your point, when a goalie is playing well, when Sully's having his A-plus game, I guarantee you, if you ask him what he's thinking about, his answer is nothing. He's seeing the puck and stopping the puck, and that's all he's doing. He's playing on instinct.
Yeah,
I guarantee you that's what it is. So at the end of the day, give me the $350 stick. Give me the $900 chest protector. Give me all that stuff. Awesome. See the puck, stop the puck, have a clear head, and keep it simple. It's the same mantra that you talked about at the beginning of the show, Mark. It hasn't changed.
I took notice about it with my gloves is – I knew if I got scored on, where I thought to myself, where were my gloves? They should have been probably further out. Probably got caught with them too far deep. That's the only thing I thought of. I mean, gloves need to be out a little further. And then the other thing is with you're talking about if any passes went through the crease, that was really, in my day, that's the goalie's fault. If that puck goes through the crease, you're not using your stick on it, that's your fault. And that's kind of how we were told. You got to get your stick on it, deflect the puck away. Don't let it go through your crease.
You know, as a father of a defenseman, Mark, okay, I'll agree with you, but it's the D's fault. It should never get there.
Well, I'll say that, but I know the real meaning. I know the real reason.
Going on, okay, so, workload, right? And, game, you said you played on some really good teams. Did you find, was it a lot tougher to be in those games when you're not seeing as many shots versus, what's the sweet spot there, right?
Like Kevin, you make a really good point because for me mentally, I know some coaches they tell you go fire the first puck off his helmet. If you did that to me, you're just waking me up. Maybe if I was sleeping, I'm not sleeping anymore. You just turned my dial on. I'm in. Like, that's not going to happen. If you're going to play that way, then you're not getting, I'm not letting any goals in. But the tough games are when you get 12 shots a game and you're sleeping or you're playing against a weaker team that you're expected to beat. That was, for me, mentally challenging. Because you know that one goal of those 12, 15 shots, or it could win the game for them. And we outshoot them 40-15 and we lose 2-1. That's not fun. So those, I'd rather, you know, obviously you want your team to shoot another team, but as a goalie, I think for me, I like having more action. I could stay in it more. And I'm telling you, anytime I was at my weakest mentally is when I was kind of sleeping. But if someone like spud ended me or hit me, like that sort of sprayed snow on my face, I mean, that would piss me off and I would turn me on and get ready. I just thought it's crazy. The coaches would say, oh, just spray some snow on his face or shoot the first puck in his head. That is the wrong thing to do. You're just waking that guy up to be pissed off and stop the puck.
I wish I would have known that in men's league, Mark. That was my antics.
Well, and the type of shots too, Mark, right? Like on a game where you're seeing 12 to 15 shots, if you're getting 5, 8, 10 that are blue line, you know, snapshots, wrist shots, and you're absorbing them, catching them, you know, controlling the play, you're in the game now, right? You're feeling it. You're seeing it. Yeah, they're few and far between, but you're making the saves. You get confidence. It's good. Your second shot of the game in a game like that could be a breakdown 2-on-1 backdoor tip. And now you have no chance of saving that puck. And now you're in your head two shots in because, to your point, okay, we're up 2-1. We've got 30 shots on goal. They've got 3, and it's a 2-1 game. What am I doing here? It's a whole different mindset for the Tendi in that same position on the type of shots that the team is allowing the goalie to see, really, at that point.
No, you're right. It was a challenge for me, and I'm sure it's a challenge for any goalie. It's just you got to find a way to stay focused. You just got to find a way, right? You got to keep your mind in it. Not easy.
On the flip side to that, we both have coached together, and you know, we've been on the other side where you are literally peppering the goalie with as many shots, but a lot of those shots are not quality shots. It's literally just, you know, you're warming up the goalie, and you know, I know, Mark, we used to talk. It's like, you know, all you're doing is making him see the puck like a beach ball. Like, be smart about it, because, you know, I can only imagine what you play those games where you get 50 shots. They're not all quality. They're helping you warm up as well, right?
They kind of love the way the Russians play, right? They don't put a bad shot on net. It's going to be a quality goal scoring opportunity when they shoot the puck, right? They're setting up for that great chance, not just putting everything on the net. But then again, if I'm coaching, you know, I'm telling my team, let's get pucks in the net, bodies in the net, right? Okay, let's make it, like for Ben, I'm telling the opposite of what, you know, I'm telling, make the goalie's life miserable. You know what I mean? Just get in his crease, get his goal, make his life miserable. That's what you want to tell your team as a coach, right?
Yeah.
That's all about.
It's shooting with purpose, so they're not just going to get a muffin in the gut and the play stops, right?
Yeah, make your shots count. I tell Ben that, don't just put the puck on net. Put it through the net. You know what I mean? It's just like a good fighter. He's not going to just throw a punch. He's going to throw it through the guy's head. You know what I mean? Same with putting pucks on the net. Don't just put it on net. Fire it hard. Put it through the net. And that's kind of mentality you got to have, right, as a goal scorer.
Yep. Yep. No, for sure.
Coming from our 31 penalty minute goaltender back in the 85-86 season. Don't just throw a punch. Put it through the guy's head, Mark.
Well, let me go back to that story since you're in Saskatoon. We'll go back to that. Tough team, right? It's a tough team. I had a lot of support, and I felt pretty tough myself. I mean, I don't think I consider myself a tough guy, but being on that team, I'm thinking I'm pretty tough. But anyways, I remember the play. I was playing in Calgary, and of course, anytime I played Calgary, I'm going to be ready to play. They traded me, right? So any little thing is probably going to set me off. And anyways, so... I remember the play. I remember Carey Clark. I remember him at the blue line. He's one of our tough guys. And I remember one of their, I don't know if he was even really a tough guy, but he took a couple of hits on him, a couple of cheap shots. And I'm going, that's pissing me off. He shouldn't be doing that. And so I know why Carey didn't respond, because he would have gone on the bench and he would have gotten in trouble from the coach. He said, that's stupid, retaliating. We're winning 4-2, whatever. You're going to take a down penalty. But I know if I did that, a coach wouldn't say anything. I would have got 5 minutes for fighting and done. But anyway, so I think it was 10 minutes back then. Maybe that's why I got some penalty minutes. I don't know. But anyways, I just triggered me, and for whatever reason, I took after this guy past the blue line. He probably thought it was crazy. So he just turtled. I didn't even think I got to throw a punch, actually. But he just turtled. That was it. And I remember my mom after the game, I just paid all that money for braces. You're doing that. But
never changes, does it, Mark? It's all the same.
Battling Billy Smith or Hextall, chopping wood out there.
Time. I haven't got to that year yet, but I really did snap my last junior game in Portland. I was an overage player on a very young team. We had 16, 17-year-old defensemen. It was a rough year. I mean, I was getting run into. We weren't winning a lot of games. I had a lot of shots. I got to the last game of the year. We're playing Seattle, our biggest rivalry in Seattle. Where one side of the rink, they're going, "Tastes great." The other side of the rink, they're going, "Less filling." All game long. They're just having a good time with it. It's awesome. Great atmosphere. It was so cool. I don't think they even watched the game. But anyways, I remember that game. I went halfway through the second period. I mean, I just got to the point where if anybody touches me, I'm just going to drop my stick and hit them with my blocker. I don't want any care at that point until they throw me out of the game. So I did once and nothing happened of it. I did it the next time and I think I got a penalty. And I just told him, I said, "Doesn't matter. If it's keep, I'm just going to do it." Next time I threw it and then some guy came after me. So it was a fight. He probably jumped me throwing a little bit. It was just a mad scramble. And that's how I ended my junior career. My last game, I got tossed. So that was it. But
did the braces survive?
The braces survived. Yeah.
Well, from Mark Reimer's last game to the end of another great episode here in the Pigeon's Nest, Mark, we really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today, relive some of the old stories. I love listening to the memories. We could do a whole nother show listening to more of them. I'm sure you got a whole bunch more. Kev, I'm sure you agree. It was a heck of a time.
Would love to have you back on. And I know we talked a lot about youth and junior. You know, we definitely have to have you back on as a second segment. And we can go into, the pro career and how that worked. And, you know, I can only imagine some of the stories that you have there.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. Thanks for having me. I'd love to come back and talk about that. Also talk about my time in Florida and roller hockey and the youth leagues there and stuff we did with roller hockey. It'd be great.
Absolutely, Mark. That sounds like a plan. We'll have our PR firm call your agent. We'll get that contract drafted up and get that booked here for you.
All right. It's been fun, guys. It's been a riot.
Absolutely, Mark. Again, we appreciate you taking the time in the nest. Kevin, C+ as always, my friend.
Hey, it's better than C-. We're getting
That's
there.
Right.
We're getting there.
That's right. Well, Kev, enjoy the rest of your week, and we will talk to you and the rest of all y'all in the nest when we see you again next time. Later.